Thank you everybody for being here. Thank you for the introduction. As John mentioned, there is an effort going on with the Global Soil Map project. However, the work that I will present today has been going on for quite some time at Purdue University, and that's where this research was conducted, and the results are from that particular research. Now, being involved with the Global Soil Map project, there is a sense that the modeling community especially is very interested in these maps at a global scale for whatever they want to predict. So recognizing that and coming also from the hydrological side, we thought it was sort of interesting to look into the influence that the spatial variability of the maps that we produce at different pixels have on the hydrological modeling. So that will be the topic of the discussion. Again, without overemphasizing it, the success of this hydrologic modeling pretty much depends on the accuracy of the data that and the quality of the data that is provided to the models. And among them is the soils, and especially their spatial distribution. So we now are in the position to sort of provide this data in the format that they recognize. As you probably are all aware, the current soil survey products that are used in the modeling community sometimes are cumbersome, and they don't really offer the best solution that the models are requiring. Sometimes this data is sort of fragmented, and those are issues that have been inherited due to the length of the time at which this survey was conducted. So there are inconsistencies, but when it comes to modeling, this becomes a bit of a problem. So we're trying to work and see now how does that pixel resolution affects this, because as far as the modeling community is interested, it makes a big difference whether or not you have a 10 meter or a 30 meter or a 90 meter, not only for processing time, but also for analyzing the data and then reaching the conclusions. So the goal of this research really, as the title showed, was to assess the impact of the spatial resolution on the of the predicted soil properties using two methods. One is the terrain attribute soil mapping, which generates continuous soil maps, and using also the current Sergo maps as they are into seeing how the stream flow respond using this distributed hydrology soil vegetation model. And I'll talk a bit more about this model. I want to spend a bit of time. I'm sure that everybody's familiar with the Sergo here, but the terrain attribute soil mapping is somewhat new in town, and it's basically an effort to convert the qualitative soil landscape models into a quantitative ones, numerical models, so that we can use those then to create these fuzzy membership class maps instead of having rigid memberships like in the soil polygons. Those fuzzy memberships have the advantage that once you have those, you can multiply them with various properties, and you can create these continuums raster maps. So we're trying to see now how this could play into the modeling. Is it advantages, and to what degree? So the two hypotheses are that we believe that the use of these continuous predicted maps would improve the prediction of stream flow from these distributed models. And also the predicted stream flow would be influenced by the soil pixel resolution or soil aggregation property map used as an input to the model. So here is the study area. This is located in southern Indiana. It's an unglaciated landscape, and you can see the boundary of the southern hill and lowlands, which is somewhat separated from the central two plains that has been influenced by the latest glacial. The thickness of this soil in this area, it varies. It goes from a few centimeters to several meters, depending on where you are on the watershed. And the majority of the soils are described here, basically the ones that are on the summits and side slopes and the ones that are on the floodplains. A closer look at the watershed shows the stream network that was used for modeling to route the stream, and also the USGS gauge that was used to test the influence of soil aggregation level to the stream flow response. So the land use cover here, it's somewhat interesting. It sort of mimics the landscape. There is almost a three-way split between the pasture, the forest, and the croplands. Mostly the pasture is on the side slopes, that on summits, which are relatively stable. And then you move on the side slopes where you have forest, which acts as a stabilizer. And then you go to the flat plains, which receive usually a bit more water, and they are easy to manage and cultivate. The distributed hydrology, the DHSVM, is a distributed model, as you can see, and it requires information for each pixel. The major inputs in this model are the digital elevation model, the precipitation, or we sometimes call it the weather forcing, then the vegetation, and then within that is the information about the soils. So it treats each pixel as a bucket, if you wish. Then the outputs, which is the one we are interested in, are several ones. This is really a water balance model. It calculates the water budget for each pixel. Among the outputs are soil moisture, water table runoff, and stream flow, and we will mostly focus on the stream flow for this particular presentation. Here is a schematic of the DHSVM and how it works, and you can see that the major drivers are the topographic data, the DM, the meteorological data, the forcing, and the land surface data, Statsco or Surgo. And I'm showing this one because the majority of the parts that we focused on are the ones that are highlighted in red boxes. And as you will see later, this has some sort of an important implication as far as to the influence or the sensitivity of the model to just the soil input information into the stream flow. Again, as I said, model operates as a bucket. Each pixel is a bucket, so it's filled up. And so from hydrological perspective, they're interested to know not only how quick this bucket fills up, but how quick it drains. So we paid a special attention to the hydraulic conductivity to sort of assess that. And then, as you see, there is a well-known trend for the K-sets that usually decrease exponentially with depth. And the models usually, in today's DHSVM or other models, they usually sometimes use just this curve fitting and these numbers. We had actual numbers, and we made sure that this was the case because we wanted to test whether or not this would make an improvement in addition to the soil depth map. So in order to look at the effect of the soil pixel aggregation, there are two issues that are going on at the same time. You have an effect due to just the increase of pixel resolution. As you increase the pixel resolution, obviously you have some effects in the stream flow. So we wanted to separate that from the effect of soil aggregation. And the way we did that was, first we produced this terrain attribute soil mappings at 10 meter, 30 meter, and 90 meter. Then we went the other way when the maps that were generated at 90 meter and 30 meter were aggregated back to 10 meter. That way we can separate the effect of pixel resolution and the effect of the soil aggregation level. And then we tested also terrain attribute test some 90 meter versus Surgo 90 meter. And the 90 meter, we were curious, sort of interested to look into this because one of the goals of the Global Soil Map project, as John mentioned, is to create these property maps at 90 meter pixel resolution dictated by the SRTM data that is being used for that. Again, these are usual steps that everybody goes to do model calibration. You have two periods, spin up and the evaluation period, each 5 year. And then we have the model and pixel resolution scenarios that were evaluated for the 1996 to 2000. We wanted to make sure that first the model performs well and matches the stream, then we can compare them the scenarios. And the way you do that, there are several indicators. One of them is the Nash Sutcliffe model efficiency, which is similar to the R square basically. So you have a higher NS, and then you have a better fit of the observed to the predicted stream flow. Here the model performance. As you can see, there is a good match between the observed and the predicted ones. However, there are some differences as far as the breaking down the R square, if you wish, or the Nash Sutcliffe efficiency. Overall, it's 0.52, but when you look at the spring one, it's very high as compared to the summer, and there's a good explanation to it. First of all, in the summer, you're dealing with thunderstorms that are isolated, so the stream flow is not going to be that responsive. Second, you're dealing with a soil that is not saturated. Then third, you're dealing with a vegetation that it's really transpiring a lot of water, so hardly the water makes it there. However, when you go to the spring and come on the back end of the fall, you can see that the efficiencies of predicting this stream flow is very, very high because the water, watershed is pretty much saturated, so it's very responsive to any changes in the weather, and there is no vegetation or evapotranspiration. So everything that falls down ends up in the stream almost. So once we did that, and it was quite interesting because we did that without any calibration at all. So that the results that I showed you had no calibration, and if for the people that are involved, engaged in the modeling world, all the models sometimes suffer for that equifinality. In other words, you can tweak all these buttons and make the stream discharge match with what the predicted one with what you have measured, but then you don't know whether or not those knobs that you're tweaking, in other words, manipulating different processes, are meaningful or not. You try to, but sometimes that's the problem with the modeling. And so generating a model with no, having this model with no calibration, it's a big deal for the modelers. So here are some of the indexes that we used. Again, this is the flashiness, and then we used the mean annual flow, maximum, and the minimum. As you can see, the way this graph reads is, if you look into the right side, going from the left, the scenarios at the bottom show the effect of pixel soil aggregation. You go from TASM 10 to 90 to 10 and 30 to 10. And then in between, you have comparisons between pixels resolution. So if you switch, if you go after the past three ones, you go to TASM 30 and 30 and then 90 to 30, you're comparing different pixel resolutions or model pixel resolution. So as you can see from this one, there's hardly any influence as far as the soil pixel aggregation. Whether you use a 10 meter or 90 to 10 or 30 to 10, then the differences are not significant. The only difference is between model pixel resolution. The same goes for the annual mean, except for the Sergo, gridded Sergo at 90 meter. And I used two scenarios there. One is the restriction to R, and then one is to any other restrictive layer. And these are the two options that you get when you query the data in NASIS and in Soil Data Mart. So as you can see, the mean stream flow is not influenced by, as I said, by model pixel size, but it's influenced by the soil. It's not influenced by soil pixel aggregation. We found the same thing for the annual minimum and also for the annual maximum. So you see this trend: the model pixel has an influence, but the soil aggregation level does not, except for the Sergo 90 meter. So again, our first hypothesis was that this continuous predicted soil property maps would improve the stream flow, and we showed that by the fact that the model performed without any calibration. So it predicted that. Then the second hypothesis was that this predicted stream flow is not is influenced by pixel resolution of soil property maps. We know that the model pixel resolution did influence, but the soil pixel aggregation did not have any influence. And obviously the sort of the message is that these continuous raster maps would be better. However, the question, the lesson learned from this exercise, we only talked about stream flow. We didn't talk about soil moisture. And we have the data, but we are still working in processing them. The soil moisture may be a bit different because you're talking about a spatial distribution on the surface. And so local variability may be important for management issues. As far as the stream goes, apparently the aggregation of the soil depth does not have any influence on this. So when we do these maps and when we generate these maps, it sometimes helps to sort of pause back a bit and ask the question, what is the property you're using it for? What scale and what you're trying to predict? So with that, I'll finish. Well, what we did we generated the maps using terrain, we used these terrain attributes, soil mapping. We generated the maps at using terrain attributes derived at 10 meter, at 30 meter, and at 90 meter. Then the property maps that we generated at 30 and 90, we resampled them to 10 meter. That's how we did it. So we wanted to have some sort of an independent, because if you just do the 10 and then you aggregate them to 30 and 90, there's no independence there. So you have to create the maps independently using independent terrain attributes derived only 10 and 30 and 90, and then aggregate 30 and 90 back to 10.
So you made the model at 10 meters, and then you aggregated from that 10 meter model higher?
No. I made the soil models, made them at 10, 30, and 90. Then 30 and 90 were aggregated back to 10. So, no, yeah. We had this discussion, because if you do that, then you're compromised somewhat, because you're having the same source. So you have to have those independent in order to sort of assess that. That's my take anyway.